This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, I'm Glenn Pugh for avweb.com. Some observers feel that the FAA's role is to both regulate and promote aviation, and that the performance of those two roles present conflicts that directly impair aviation safety. To be fair, the role of promotion isn't specifically listed in the FAA's mission statement online, but the agency does say it exists in part to encourage and develop civil aeronautics. Whatever the case, what matters is results, and today we're speaking with David Soucy. David is a former aviation safety inspector and accident investigator who worked within the FAA for 16 years. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Now, I should mention that aside from serving within the FAA, David is currently working with airlines to develop an independent safety information sharing environment separate from federal government programs. First of all, David, that work history is all fine and nice, but I understand that your involvement here is also very personal. If you would, please tell me the story of Mike Myers.
It is very personal, Glenn. Mike was a pilot that worked for me when I was a senior director at Air Methods. Air Methods was a small company at the time. Of course, now it's one of the largest helicopter companies in the world. But when on Christmas Eve 1985, Mike had taken a flight to the Four Corners area up in the mountains. And after the flight nurses that were with him delivered a baby, they took off and the wind had changed. Mike wasn't able to maintain altitude and went down the highway right into a wire. The wire struck him, went right through the plexiglass window and into Mike. And unfortunately, Mike didn't make it past the next day, although I did get to talk to Mike in the hospital before he did pass away. And he made it clear to me that it could have been avoided, and indeed it could have. They had come to me, the pilots had come to me several months before, asking me to purchase wire strike kits for the helicopters that we had in the company. And I did the best I could to weigh the cost-benefit against the safety benefit. And in 1985, we didn't know much about that. We still don't today, honestly. But I do try to talk about that and share that with as many people as I can. I want people to understand how it feels to have made a safety decision or not made a safety decision and end up with someone losing their life over it.
So how do you feel that experience has affected you in your career?
Well, that experience was 9,394 days ago, Glenn, and it's with me every day. I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror, and I tell myself that I'm not going to make a decision that's going to kill anybody today. I'm going to try to make sure that I'm vigilant about the way I think about safety and not let the statistics of one in a million make me feel like I can't do anything about safety or that I shouldn't consider things that I should. So it's been my windmills that I've been chasing for that many days, trying to communicate that message to as many leaders who do make safety decisions and as many pilots as I can to help them maintain their vigilance and safety.
I suppose in that way, your very unfortunate experience has actually been a benefit, hopefully, to you and to those around you. My understanding, though, is that you believe the FAA, which may be more detached in many of its decisions, will not take a proactive approach to discovering unreported safety issues. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, it's interesting, Glenn. I believe that the FAA has some very good people in it. I think that they intend to do the right thing. I don't think anybody intentionally does not follow up on something that they feel to be safe. I think the problem becomes when they have, well, in the book, in my book, I refer to this as a conspiracy of inaction. The thought and the lax attitude of, well, that's not really a lax attitude, but a pattern of feeling you're safe, of feeling that what you do isn't going to change the safety environment. And eventually you get to this place where, well, if I don't make a decision, it's okay. So like that in the FAA, if I don't file a violation, if I don't follow up on things that are safety issues that are unreported, then therefore it's okay. It's going to continue to be safe the way it is now.
So in the cause of safety and the culture at the FAA, do you see yourself as sort of a whistleblower?
I don't really see it that way, Glenn. I know that it may appear that way on the surface, but I really don't see it that way. I've always been very good at identifying what problems there are, breaking those down into small pieces, and then seeing how they interact and how they react with each other. And I really see myself as seeing maybe a different perspective, and I'm just not ashamed to share that with anyone, and I don't think anyone should be. Well, there's things that need to be said. We have to stay transparent in safety.
So let's get down to the nuts and bolts. What, in your opinion, are the key problems with the safety systems currently in place?
Well, I think that the challenges that are ahead for safety are several fold, obviously, but in our short time here, I'll bring up a few. Safety information sharing was brought up as in the certification process study following the Air Alaska accident. In that certification process study, I was one of the leads on the information sharing group. And what we discovered there was that airlines are hesitant to share information between themselves, and therefore it's very difficult to find aggregate data. There was another airline that may have had information that could have prevented that Air Alaska accident, but yet it wasn't shared between them. So I think the biggest challenges now are that, and that as we have large airlines merging together, if you think about that, you've got two mega carriers getting together and merging, and now you've got an Uber carrier. What happens to the people who make decisions about safety investments, the CEO, those people who are up higher, that just elevates them to a higher level, removing them even further from the actual operational decisions and the things that the pilots face and the mechanics face and the line faces and the dispatchers face? Those things have to be communicated up the chain. Now the chain is much longer. So I think we've got to be super hyper critically vigilant about how we think about and communicate the safety risks and the hazards that we put into our safety management systems.
Do you have real-world examples of glaring inefficiencies in the FAA's own safety practices?
Well, I think the glaring inefficiencies I can see are that the FAA has taken under ISO 9000 and procedures that are very strict and very measured and quantifiable, which is good. But an over-reliance on institutionalized behaviors, institutionalized reactions to things, can make you overconfident in those things. Much like NASA became overconfident in their ability to launch the space shuttle and didn't see minor changes in patterns, minor hazards. For example, the temperature of the air with the O-ring on the space shuttle as it took off. Those are things that they didn't see because they were over-reliant on those standardized institutionalized behaviors. And I think the FAA is in danger of that, of becoming simply, this is how we react to this situation. Therefore, the anomalies, the things that pilots face, the things that airlines face, the new things and new challenges, as we become more and more complex with our aircraft and with our flight control systems and everything that we have out there, the cyberkinetics, for example, is a way of at introducing new risks. But if we over-rely on what it is that we've been doing in the past, which I believe the FAA is in danger of doing, that can create safety issues in itself.
Well, now tell me about the safety information analysis and sharing environment that you're working on.
The safety information sharing environment, the way I view it is it's a set of pipes you know, back in the day, we didn't have hot and cold running water or sewers, but eventually we realized we had to have the infrastructure for that. This is kind of where we are with information sharing. We can share information between ourselves and among ourselves, but we don't have a strong infrastructure, a set of pipes that connects all that together to where we can quickly and dynamically share things that happen immediately. And that's what the safety information sharing environment is about. It was, we originally started talking about this, when I was with the FAA 3 or 4 years ago and developing a safety information sharing environment, and it progressed into the what's now called the ASIAS, the Aviation Safety Information Analysis System, I think it is. And Jay Pardee was running that, and it was a good system. It worked well. The challenges are that any information that's in that system is accessible through FOIA. So once again, we're back to the challenge of sharing information. Can an airline share information between themselves? Even the federal government has laws where they can't. It can be viewed as price fixing or you know, any kind of communication between airlines can be anti-competitive. And so there's laws against that. So how do we fix that? And that's what SICE does. It's a set of rules. It's a set of agreements that are made amongst airlines as to how they're going to share information. And the information about where the data came from isn't even available. There's no way to FOIA that or acquire it through Congress or anywhere else. So that provides a true anonymous set of data, a true anonymous clean data that's not swayed or redacted or diluted in any way. And it also provides the way to share the analysis of that data, the information that comes out of it, and then hopefully the knowledge that we learn as to what we know now about how we operate in the airspace.
And in that environment, is it somehow spared the critical eye of journalists when people look in and see something? Are they able to pull it out and make a glaring example out of something that's not actually a huge problem, but rather is a solution in the works?
Well, no, they wouldn't be in this system. That, the system for that is covered under 121.465, I believe, where there's 17 or 18 items that are mandatory to be reported. They're considered safety critical items, and those have to be reported, and those are available to the public. And the public deserves and needs the right to be able to see those things and understand those things and assess their own risks about what airlines they're going to fly on and what's going to happen from that data. The information I'm talking about are minor changes. It's, again, being able to recognize a hazard has to deal with changes in patterns, if you can recognize changes in patterns. But if the information is limited or restricted only to those things that are known to be safety critical items, it prevents us from looking forward. We can only look back and try to fix things that have happened. But in this world, in this complex world, and the level of safety we're at right now, it's mandatory that we look forward. We have to try to predict and prevent. That's what science is about. That's what information is about, is predicting and preventing, not looking back and preventing it from happening again.
So do you find yourself critical of the Aviation Safety Action Program and Air Traffic Safety Action Program that FAA's Randy Babbitt said last year the agency would merge into one system? I guess I should point out, for those unfamiliar, those systems are meant to acquire information without doling out punishment, thereby encouraging people to participate, and to identify trouble spots within the aviation system, make corrections, and avoid incidents. Are you critical of those programs?
I'm not critical of the program at all. I think that's a fantastic program. I think it needs to be out there. It has to be out there. Once again, though, the reason for that program is to mine data, is to get data and information that they don't currently have, because you need to have that information to move forward and look forward. The challenge, as in any large organization, and especially the FAA, the challenge is in implementation. It's a good idea. It works. It's a fantastic program. But once it's implemented, there's too many people get their fingers in the pot. And pretty soon you've got a program that's diluted or that's misdirected, or you have information released or used inappropriately. Even though there's a promise it won't be, it can be, and it makes me or a pilot, any pilot, feel like they're vulnerable to this. So it's still restricting the data. It still is not quite there. I think it's a great step forward. It's been a great program, and I think there's more it can do. But I don't think it's worth, you don't throw out the baby with bathwater. I think there's ways to correct it and fix the problems that it has. But because the problems are related specifically, in my mind, to just the implementation of it, not the program itself.
All right. Well, let's hit it with bullet points. What are the solutions that you're promoting, and how will those solutions be applied in the real world?
Well, there's two real solutions that I have and that I've been preaching. I spoke 2 days ago at the Transportation Safety Institute, the Volpe Center. I was there with the director and several of their leaders there. I presented to them what I call Dare to Repair Your Thinking. Repairing your thinking is where we start. I mentioned before the over-reliance on institutionalized thinking and institutionalized behavior. It has to be there. I mean, there's things that you have to do automatically as a pilot, as a mechanic, anything else. If you're stalling, what do? You put the nose down, let's get some more airspeed so you can take control again. That doesn't need to be challenged. You don't need to think about other alternatives or your environment or anything else at that point. You just do it. But an over-reliance on that institutionalized behavior, as you recognize something, needs to be changed. And so I have a methodology. I'm writing a book now called Dare to Repair Your Thinking, and which has a mnemonic or a process or a system for you to daily or weekly monitor your own thinking. Especially important for a pilot to be able to understand that he is aware of his environment. Because if you don't exercise those things, those other things, that your environment, your ability to analyze other alternatives, and your ability to realize that your thinking needs to be repaired, if you don't exercise those, they atrophy. And once they atrophy, you start not being able to see risks and hazards and threats that are out there for you. So that's step one. And I've been trying to plant the seeds for that. Step two is to be able to have free and open information sharing And although many people have discounted that as being impossible, I believe it can be done. And the team and the group that I'm working with right now on SICE, on the Safety Information Sharing Environment, is well on the way to making that possible.
Well, looking forward, what are the greatest obstacles? And what changes do you see as essential to advancing the cause of aviation safety within and outside of the FAA?
Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record here because I believe that those two points are the same. Being able to change our thinking and open our minds, basically we need to be more ADD. We need to see more about what's going on around us and less prioritizing of what it is that we're going to do or not going to do as we move forward. The new challenges that we face, the complexities that are going to go on in the aircraft, the new aircraft that will be coming out with an over-reliance on the cyberkinetics, being able to, you have no physical connection other than computers. You've got 70, 80 computers trying to work together, and you've got literally billions of lines of code. How do we know how those billions of lines of code interact with each other? How do we know what's a potential failure of code that's going to control the aircraft different or control the engines different? Those are our challenges. Those are the things that have to be done. We have to change our thinking about how we think about managing those risks and those hazards that we're going to be faced with.
We've been speaking with David Soucy. Former FAA accident investigator David is currently working with airlines to develop an independent safety information sharing environment separate from federal government programs. He's also author of a book titled Why Planes Crash. That's available at most book outlets, including Amazon.com. I'm Glenn Pugh for AvWeb.com. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.